How do you like your coffee? Freshly roasted? You can just smell it, can't you? Well, how would you like it brought to you? If you're passionate about your coffee, then a Passion for the Bean is for you. At a Passion for the Bean, they custom roast coffee beans from around the world when you place your order, so your coffee is guaranteed to be fresh, rich, full-bodied, and full of flavor. That's not the taste that you get from coffee beans that have been sitting on a supermarket or coffeehouse shelf for weeks. Now, to have the ultimate coffee experience delivered to your home or office, call a Passion for the Bean at 480-703-2326. That's 480-703-BEAN. A Passion for the Bean has joined forces with the American Stroke Association in the fight to end stroke. Now, you can help by purchasing an ASA signature blend, and 30% of the proceeds will go directly to the ASA. Help us put an end to stroke. The life you save may be your own. And call a Passion for the Bean today, 480-703-2326.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where each week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in between body, mind, and spirit. And to me, the whole point of psychotherapy is to create an awareness so that you can build a greater sense of balance in your life, in your relationships, within yourself, and in your thought processes, and the way you relate to people, and the way you live in the world. Balance is the key. And that's a very key part of my topic today, which is about transsexual, the challenge of being. And if there's any human being on the planet that is needing and trying hard to find balance in their lives, it is an individual whose inner sense of who they are does not always match up with the physical sense of who they are when they look in the mirror. And in a minute I'll be introducing to you an expert in the field. Her name is Helen Hill. But before I even get into introducing my guest and getting started with the topic, I want to acknowledge a happy occasion, which is my dad and my stepmom's anniversary. I believe it's somewhere over the 31-year mark. Julie and Zena Altshuler, I'm wishing you a very happy anniversary today. And on the other end of the spectrum, I want to acknowledge the death of somebody who I have always known and seen as a great leader and a very courageous individual. His name is Eric Rolfes, and he was an outspoken organizer in the gay community and a Humboldt University professor who viewed sexual liberation as crucial to social justice. He died of a heart attack Monday in Provincetown, Massachusetts. I knew him going back into the 80s when he was still living in the Los Angeles area. And in the 80s, as AIDS decimated the gay communities around the nation, Rolfes confronted the crisis in Los Angeles, where he served as director of the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center Services Center from 1985 to 1988. Under Rolfes' leadership, the center created one of the nation's earliest HIV prevention programs and created shelter for homeless gay and lesbian youth. Now, he also was director for a little while of Shanti. He moved up to San Francisco and did some amazing work up there. He's written about 12 books and has really been known in the country, in the gay GLBT community as well as outside it, as a real leader. And he died suddenly of a heart attack in Provincetown yesterday. And the Lauren Ostro of the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center was quoted in his obituary as saying, "His leadership contributed enormously to our understanding of the need for honest discussions about the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community and its issues. And it is really that leadership and that dialogue which I think is a bridge to the fact that I can even do the show that I'm doing today and the shows that I've done throughout the month of June since it's Gay Pride Month, have been doing shows throughout the month of June dealing much more directly with GLBT issues if you've been listening to the show. And if it were not for people like Eric getting out in the world and getting dialogue going and raising consciousness throughout this country and throughout the world, it would be difficult to be doing a show that we're doing today or a show that I do on a regular basis at 7 p.m. on a Friday evening while people are driving home from work listening to the radio and looking for information that might expand their consciousness and help them grow. Or I know also there are people who listen to the show who really get upset about the topics I pick and the stance that I take on a lot of issues. And if you are so inclined to call in today and discuss or share or react to anything that we're discussing on the show today, this is a live call-in show this week, and the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. If you're listening via the Internet, which I know that there are a number of you listening outside the Phoenix area on your computers, it's the same number. If you feel like calling in, join the show tonight, 480-949-1310. So getting back to the topic of this evening's show, I met a woman at a conference on Saturday. It was a conference for the Lesbian and Gay Psychotherapy Association of Southern California. And Helen Hill was one of the presenters, and the topic of her workshop is actually the topic of tonight's show, Transsexual, The Challenge of Being. And on her website, she has a paragraph here that I really want to read in order to lead into getting started on today's topic. She writes, "Gender is a gift. It is a unique and defining aspect of one's existence. Gender exists in mind, soul, and body. When gender of the mind or soul or body is not in congruence, then there are issues of division, pain, and suffering. It is only by examining who one is, by seeking to understand one's unique gift, that congruence, peace, and healing can begin. Transition is not a solution, but the beginning of a journey on a long path towards wellness. Perhaps for the very first time in one's life, it can truly be said we are learning to live. And that is the gift itself, living." Now that paragraph can be descriptive of psychotherapy and personal growth no matter what the issue is. That's why I like it so much. But in particular, as she starts off, it's about gender issues. Now, Helen Hill, herself a transsexual, is a graduate of Antioch University with a master's in clinical psychology. She provides individual therapy pertaining to gender, trauma, and sexuality issues. She interned at Antioch University Counseling Center and is a frequent speaker, guest lecturer at Southern California universities and agencies on issues pertaining to gender, marginalized populations, and treatment. In addition, Helen brings a depth of real-life experience, knowledge, understanding, and compassion. And that's really what I got from her when I heard her speak at the conference on last Saturday. It's not just the compassion, it's the fact that she's able to take her own life experiences, she's able to take her own pain and suffering and use it as actually very seriously, but often through a very nice sense of humor that I found from her, an ability to really help one understand what this is about in terms of transsexualism or transgender. And Helen, I really want to welcome you to the show. I know this is your first time on a radio show. Welcome this evening.
Oh, thank you, Stuart. God, with that build-up, I hope I don't let you down.
I don't think you will. I want to jump right in here and get some definitions going.
Okay.
Because transgender, transsexual, how do you define transgender, and how does transsexual fit into that definition? Because I know a lot of my listeners may not really be aware, and there are many of us who actually are in the field who still get confused.
Well, thank you for that intro. The definitions do get a lot of misconceptions. And that's the sad part, because people are going to watch Jerry Springer, or they're going to watch Maury Povich, or they're going to see the news clips of the most extravagant aspects of a pride parade, and then they're going to paint everyone with the same brush, not understanding that segments do not show everything. So looking at it, transgender is an umbrella term for several different groups of people who, if you're a layperson, basically the issue that you notice is that they all share something in common, which has to do with clothes or has to do with presentation of gender. So with okay. that, I'll go over the terms. Cross-dresser, which used to be known as transvestite, in some circles still is, are men who wear women's clothes. Or it could be women who wear men's clothes, but women do that all the time now, and they're not considered cross-dressers.
Okay.
So, but it is... Men who cross-dress are heterosexual, all right? And that is a common misconception that they're not heterosexual or that they're some sort of pervert or that they're gay. No, if they were gay, they'd be a drag queen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So heterosexual men are cross-dressers by definition. Drag queens are gay men. Drag kings are lesbian women. Female impersonators fall under the drag queen category. I don't know.
Or male impersonators.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And then we have fetish dressers. Those are the ones that people more often or not see on the news and all. The ones in the stilettos, the fishnet stockings, who do it for the sexual rush. Then we
or
have...
Or some of our male listeners who may mm-hmm. be driving in their car right now wearing women's panties underneath their pants.
Exactly.
And nobody has known about that all day.
And no one's known about it, and nobody will. Mm-hmm. Cross-dressers, the reasons for cross-dressing are varied. Some do it for the risk. Some do it because some aspect of themselves in their lives does not get to play out. As a dear friend once said to me, that which is suppressed will find a way to be expressed. So sometimes mm-hmm. cross-dressing can be indicative of other things going on, just like for so many things in our lives. But often it's a way of expressing some feminine or nurturing or aspect of a person that is suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
An intersex person is a person, or what people would recognize as hermaphrodite, is a person whose genitals are not clear what gender they may be. 1 in 1,000 babies is born intersexed. And in the old days, doctors used to believe they had the right to decide the sex of the child. Because the question, words,
they're born with evidence of both, and the doctor makes the decision what to do medically in order to create what they believe it should be.
Yes, often without consulting the parents. And the pressure is always, when a baby is born, what is it? And the pressure's on the parents. But a lot has changed, where the recommendation is that you wait and see how the baby develops. Pick a gender-neutral name. By the age of 3 or 4, you're going to have pretty clear indications what the gender of that child is, how that child mm-hmm. feels, how that child behaves, how that child thinks. But amazingly, even today, 50% of doctors who deal with, you know, delivery of children, babies, still believe they have the right, they know best how to pick the gender of a child. And that's a little scary.
Well, as a therapist's perspective, when you're talking about that, what I'm getting is this image of a child being born as a intersex or hermaphrodite,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor, I would think, you know, most doctors have a difficult time talking about sex with their patients to begin
right.
with. Now you have a situation like this where it's really at the core of a human being.
Exactly.
And so I can almost imagine the doctor wanting to fix it right away because
yes.
it's too uncomfortable not to. I can almost imagine the parents wanting to go one way or the other and get concrete one way or the other to get their mind wrapped around, which is what you just said. For 9 months they've been saying, is it going to be a boy or a girl? Well, now it's a boy and a girl. Now what do we do? Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
And that they want a quick fix, which is what we do in this country anyway for most things. But what you're saying is the quick fix, in this case, is probably the worst thing you can do.
Yes, it is.
And
it
it's just too uncomfortable to spend 3 or 4 years looking at this thing and the parents not knowing, is it my fault? What did I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and feeling shame and guilt if they're not getting help to work through that.
And having to, you know, having questions from the school, having questions
mm-hmm.
at church, having questions from the family. And we are a society that's polarized about sex. We are fascinated with it, and yet we also have a 20-foot pole to keep us, you know, that far away from it. And so those feelings, those discomforting feelings that the parent and the doctor want to get away from, actually, they probably the best thing they could do is sit with them and just bear those feelings, because their child would be better off. Their child would be better off. John
Basically,
Nunney.
Basically, what you're saying is let the child decide who he is or who she is.
Yes, because they will eventually
okay.
anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They will. And unfortunately, John Money believed that at one point being a boy or a girl was all cultural. So in several instances, in one particular case where the boy's penis was cauterized by accident, completely burned off during a circumcision, he told them to raise it as a girl, raise the child as a girl, give them hormones, nobody will know because it's all cultural. Well, almost all his patients committed suicide because
mm-hmm.
how they felt about themselves did not agree with how they were being raised. And so in the end, the truth comes out. In the end, whatever you suppress is going to come out, because being a gender and orientation are just as much a matter of the brain as much as a matter of the body. And you can't just excise it out of your brain. And it's in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last category, and that is transsexual, as
yeah.
we're talking about transgender terms.
Right.
Describe what transsexual is, and where do you fit in this list?
Well, transsexual is a person who knows, I think for the most part, in fact, most, I haven't seen too many who haven't, but some have some confusion, but most transsexuals know that what they are doesn't agree with what they see. Whether they're male to female transsexuals or female to male transsexuals, it's a matter of my body isn't agreeing with my brain, okay, and my heart and my soul, but essentially the brain. I know that what I am on the outside is not what I really am inside. And it used to be a joke. People would just make a joke of it, get over it, grow up, deal with it. You know, a lot of people want to be shortstops, but they can't be. And you can believe it all you want, but you still have to go out and work at your desk job. No, it's not like that. It's not a dream and it's not a fantasy. It's a matter of how the person really is. Inside and how they're wired. There are studies coming out. There's an old study, well, not that old, but a few years, a cadaver study that compared the brains of transsexuals and compared the brains of men, gay men, women, and lesbian women. And the slices of the brains near the hypothalamus, I forgot all the scientific words, but it's on my website if you want to look it up, by the way, helen-hill.com. It compared the slices, and the men's brains and the gay men's brains matched up 99.9%. And the women's brains and the lesbian women's brains matched up 99.9%. But the male to female transsexuals, their brains didn't match up with the men. it matched up with the women. And the UCLA is doing a new study now. It is not released yet. All I have is anecdotal stories from the transsexuals who have done the MRI scans and the other scanning on brain activity and different sizes and all. And the anecdotal stories that I've been hearing is that, again, it's being corroborated that male-to-female transsexuals match up with women's brains. So there is something in the wiring going on. It's not simply a matter of fantasy or desire. It's a matter of the way the person's wired.
Mm-hmm.
So in this umbrella, we have these five different groups that are all under this umbrella, but they have very different motivations, reasons, feelings about how they exist. They're not the same, yet they all get painted with the same brush. Now, people call me a transsexual, okay, and I've gotten used to it. But the fact is, my parents didn't know what to do with me when I was born. And so they gave me up to my grandparents, 1,800 miles away for the first 2 years of my life. What I didn't find out, I didn't find that out till after they were dead. What I also found out, though, is that I had an older sister who was also given up. And so what I saw was a pattern that my parents kept the boys and gave away the girls. And they just didn't know what to do with me. And I didn't develop like the other guys developed. And it was just one of those things growing up in the Midwest in a small town in Kansas with four brothers and going to a parochial school. My parents were rednecks. My brothers are rednecks. And the Nile was not just a river in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. And so were you being raised at that point in boys' clothes or girls' clothes?
They raised me as a boy.
Okay.
And I remember the earliest picture I ever drew of myself. I was 4 years old, and I drew a picture of myself, and I thought nothing of it. I drew a picture of myself, and it was a little girl. I didn't think, oh, gee, I've drawn a picture of a little girl. I'm going to be in big trouble. Now, my folks were violent, especially my mother, very violent. And it was kind of sad in that respect. And so when I drew the picture, I put it away in my drawer because it wasn't because I drew a girl, but it was because I was afraid that I might get punished for simply drawing things that my mom didn't like. And so my brother found it, and he teased me that he was going to show it to my mom. And so he did. And then it was like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. I ran through the house, and she was chasing me, and this was a World War II style house, and I burst into the bathroom to find my dad, because the bathroom was the library, and he was sitting there reading the paper, and I wrapped my arms around him. I said, help me, help me, help me, and he looked at me, and he said, what the hell? And my mom grabbed me and pulled me off of him, and so I grabbed the sink, and it was the old days of exposed pipes in the sink, and I grabbed the sink, she grabbed me, she pulled me, I pulled the sink came off the wall, and water went everywhere. And for one surrealistic moment, everybody stopped and just stared. Okay? And then Dad jumped up, ran outside, turned off the water, and my mom pulled me into the bedroom and beat me until I passed out. So whatever I was, I knew it wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents grew up. My grandparents were alcoholics. My parents did drink a lot in the 50s from the family albums and stuff, and I don't know if that influenced their behavior later or not, but it was my mom was a very angry person, and she always believed that women were whores. And she walked out on several of my brother's weddings, and so there was this thing of she had stuff going on with her own sexuality, with her own womanhood that played upon me, and every time I would behave in a effeminate manner or a girl manner, then I would be beaten or locked in the basement. Mm-hmm. And that was a very clear indicator that I needed to be careful. And so you can only fight against the tide so long before you go, you know what, I don't want to be beaten. You go along with the way things are, that you accept that whatever I am, it's what I am. But I never fit in with the boys, and I prefer to be have my best friends were the girls, although basically I hung out alone because girls would wonder why a boy would want to hang out with them.
Right.
and you didn't fit in with the boys, so I basically hung out by myself.
Well, as a gay boy, I mean, when I was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, I already had the conflict going on inside myself. You know, I knew that I was different, and I had the same experience. You know, I felt more comfortable hanging around with the girls only because I knew the boys were going to be teasing
right.
me and abusing me more just because I wasn't athletic.
Exactly.
You know, so it comes in a lot of forms, and I think the essence is two things that I'm getting. Even if you were not a transsexual,
mm-hmm.
The household you grew up in still would have given you your share of issues that you needed to work on.
And I think,
you know?
I think in some ways my gender saved my life
mm-hmm.
and gave me, it's one thing I could not surrender. I could surrender a lot of other things, but I couldn't surrender that one.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to tell me I was stubborn as hell. So
mm-hmm.
who knows? It's a very tough one. And just one other remark about intersex. There are two hormone washes when a baby's in the womb. At the early stages of pregnancy, the first hormone wash sets gender and orientation, the studies indicate, sets gender and orientation in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second hormone wash occurs weeks later and tells the genitals how to develop. Now, if those hormone washes are not the same, for whatever reason, then you could end up with an intersex baby or a transsexual or a gay or lesbian person. And
mm-hmm.
You could do everything right. You can eat right, do everything right, and you can still end up, you know, genetics, predisposition, luck of the draw. DES played a large part in the 50s to help stabilize pregnancies. I know that my mother was on it for 8 pregnancies. What it did or didn't do and how it affected myself and my brothers, who knows? You know,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know if it affected us at all. So kind of like the old saying that stuff happens, you know. Stuff happens, and sometimes we just don't know why. But it doesn't mean we're less human. It doesn't mean people should quit being human beings to each other. Because if
right.
you've ever felt different, if you've ever felt not heard, if you've ever felt that you don't fit, then you're just like me. And I can't imagine a person on the face of the earth who hasn't felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you see what I'm saying.
And that was my second point a little bit earlier, was it's so important that adults, whether they be the parents, whether they be teachers, whether they be neighbors,
mm-hmm.
clergy, whoever is in children's lives, it's so important that the adults become so much more sensitive to the terror and hell that kids go through for so many different reasons. And rather than humiliating them and ripping them to shreds and putting them down and making them wrong for everything they say or do, it's so important that the adults in this world have a greater sense of understanding and compassion and patience with the differences amongst children, and
well,
especially the teachers.
And I think it's often a lot of projection and disowned material going
mm-hmm.
on. That is, whatever the child's bringing out, whether it's a gay child or a paraplegic child or a transsexual child or whatever, it brings out a lot of projections from other people, including the parents. And yes, there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of fault-finding and a lot of self-loathing, but the fact is that the child becomes a receptacle for society's ills. And that's not fair to the child. So when I say tolerate how you feel, it's really important to be able to do that. I have to work on that myself, and I work on it every day, to allow yourself to tolerate how you feel so that you don't mess up someone else's life, so that you give an innocent child or an innocent adult, because I believe we're all innocent inside,
right.
a chance to flower and grow and mature and have good relationships.
Now, how do you apply this? I mean, people who are listening may actually be, some of them may be surprised to know that you actually are a parent yourself.
I'm a parent.
Do you apply this? How do you apply this to the raising of your own children? And
well,
how do they handle who you are?
Well, now that's very interesting. I'm going to go far afield and answer the question and come right back to it. But honestly, I've been very blessed. I have two teenagers who are been very good to me. I could not ask for better. They did ask that I not use their names because when I transitioned, it was very tough for them. And it was a very, very tough thing. Not so much because of me, but because of what others did. And it was very disappointing to me. The thing that hurt the most was what grown-ups did to my children. And I would prefer they take it out on me than visit my sins upon my children. I think the worst thing is no, these aren't bad people. Please don't get me wrong. You know, these are good people who were scared, who couldn't tolerate how they felt. And so
who didn't
my children
understand
suffered.
What was really going on.
Right.
And their ignorance, which is what, yeah.
And so my children got hurt. And that's the biggest regret I have, is that my children got hurt. I was at the end of the road. There was no other choice for me. I explained things to my kids, and I worked to protect them. But in the end, I did move my one of my children to a private school. Another of my children is a very eclectic person, and she kept a different group of friends, and that was really helpful. She goes to an Ivy League school now, and I'm just very proud of them for hanging in there with me, and I couldn't ask for better. You know, the best thing I had, if I'd lost the love and respect of my children, then I would have felt that I had messed up as a parent and as a human being. But the fact is, I didn't, and that was very helpful to me to know that.
Well, I think it says something to how you are as a parent that when it came time to talk to them about this, that you had children that were able to handle it the way they did and understand that their love for you overpowered any confusion or judgment they might have in this process.
Well, it wasn't easy.
It says
easy.
Something to who you are as a parent.
It wasn't easy for them. But I have to say they are remarkable young people, and they are good, good human beings, and they're going to do great in life because they're tough and they're compassionate. And they know what it's like to be outside, and they know what it's like to be on the inside. And so I think that helps them a great deal. I think,
well, I think to all these people that are screaming about kids that are being raised by gays or lesbians about role modeling and things like that, I know that you're not a lesbian or a gay man, but the differences that you present, you know, would be the type of things that a lot of conservatives would say, well, this is why you shouldn't be able to or allowed to have kids or anything else because you're going to screw them up. You're proof that that's not the case.
Well, all we
and
had
that there are a lot of gay and lesbian parents out there who are raising very healthy, wonderful, well-adjusted, loving, compassionate children.
All we had to do, and I want to say that my ex has been very helpful and support. I don't want to say supportive as in yeah, go for it, but supportive in that we are both loving parents, and she has been very supportive post transition. That we continue to be good parents, and I like that. You know, it was very hard because part of the issue is the question is, my God, what have I married, and what does that say about me? Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult one. It's a difficult one to get your head around it because the biggest issue I had to get my head around is that I am a woman and a father, and it's the truth. My children call me Dad in private, and it's a good word, and I wouldn't want them not to.
Because you did father them.
Yes, and they are great kids, and I consider that a good word, a nurturing word, a loving word, and to deny the truth is a big issue for me, because if this is all about embracing the truth, then if I deny an aspect of my life, then I'm still staying closeted, aren't I? I'm still hiding, which is a big issue that transsexuals face because one transsexual a month is murdered in this country, and it's a very sad and scary thing. And the issues are. Do I go stealth, which is, say, you know, I've come out of the closet to do my transition, and I've transitioned, and I don't want anyone to ever know that I was a guy. And it's a real question of safety. I mean, there are some real safety issues here for most of us. And it's not that I'm going to walk down the street with a sign that says, guess what, I'm a transsexual. But but as you talk to me and you get to know me, you'll figure it out. And I don't, I mean, I look like a girl because I look like a girl since I was 15 when I went through puberty. So I hid it, wore baggy clothes, the whole bit. But the thing is, my voice will definitely make you wonder. And so as things go, once you get to know me, I hope you know me as a person and as a good person. But there are some real issues about whether a transsexual comes out or not. However, from my perspective, when you are in a relationship with someone and you have baggage like I do, I have children, you know, I had to live as a guy, I owe it to the person I love to tell them.
Right.
I do. Will that destroy it, ruin it? Possibly. Possibly. But the fact is, if I don't, then I have built a relationship on deceit.
And it destroys it and ruins it anyway.
It destroys it eventually.
Right.
And now, if a young person, I'm talking teenagers and young people, transition at an early age, that's a whole different ball of wax, because you could truly say they've always been their gender, and they essentially have no baggage. And so I think, you know, you have to look at it case by case, but I still believe that in the end, one must live truthfully. If one is to have congruence and peace inside, you must live truthfully.
Well, that's the way I started the show, about finding balance, and that's why I said tonight's show, if there's any show I've ever done that's talking about body, mind, and spirit balance, it's this show. And before we went on the air, actually, and I can say this now because of what you were just talking about, and I'm sure my engineer Wade is smiling right now, because when I got into the studio, he said my guest had just called in and that he will call back again. I said, well, no, my guest is a woman. And I know I could say this to you because I know you just said you encounter this a lot, and I also know you have a good sense of humor. That it's evident you deal with this all the time.
Well, you have to deal with the reality. There are many who go for voice surgeries, and there are voice therapy. And believe me, my voice is nothing like it used to be. I was a soprano in high school, and then I learned to drop my voice so that I wouldn't get picked on. And then when I went to speech therapy, my therapist said, oh, my God, what have you done to your voice? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, it's too low. You need to get it back where it was. But we couldn't get it back where it was because I've damaged my vocal cords. So this is the best I can do. And it's not bad, because if you go for the surgeries, you could end up losing your voice permanently or ending up with Betty Boop. And so I go with this. And one of the most remarkable things was, I was in London last summer, and I was having a very okay time, and I couldn't beat the men off with a stick, and I was like, this is very strange. Why aren't these guys concerned? And a friend of mine there, don't you get it? I said, no, what? And she goes, your voice is higher than ours because the rest of us smoke. And so it was really cool. I mean, it was very nice, you know. But the other part is that in Europe, I don't mean to say, oh, gosh, it's so much better on the continent. But in Europe, the views about sexuality are different. And the views about sexuality here are more rigid and polarized. So I think that when you encounter men, and they find out that they like you, and then they find out you're transsexual, oh, my God, there's so much stuff that plays out. And I talk on how graphic can I be on this program?
Well, just certain words. You just got to be careful. And
okay.
Be as graphic in description, but there are just certain
words. I'll be
words
biologically correct.
Okay.
When I work on
Skid Row. You said penis before already anyway.
Right.
That's okay.
All right. When I work on Skid Row, and I work with a lot of people helping train them on how to deal with transgender populations, there's a huge amount of transgender that are homeless because nobody wants to deal with them. You know, it's like, I'm uncomfortable. Since you make me uncomfortable, I want you to go away. And that's basically what happens. So in these organizations that help the homeless, they're very caring people, but they get freaked as well as anybody. And then I talk to the big burly guys who provide security and who work with the homeless, and they're very caring, but they've got the many misconceptions. And they said, yeah, we're freaked out. You know, transsexuals are confused. One, no. I said, no, you know what? Transsexuals really aren't confused. If you let them be, they'll tell you who they are. They'll very clearly tell you who they are. Now, if you mess with them and, you know, harass them and beat them and scare them and reject them, there is some confusion. But for the most part, I haven't met transsexuals who have been confused about who they are. I've met society being confused and scared about transsexuals. And so I said to the men, I finally figured it out. I said, I know what it is. And they go, what? I said, you're scared to death that any man would cut off their penis. To you, that's what a transsexual is. And I said, that is not a transsexual. Okay? A transsexual doesn't think of their penis as important to them, or their body part as important to them. They loathe it. They hate it. They're not connected to it. And that's when I give the example of my son, as you heard, and I'm going to give it now.
Mm-hmm.
When my son was 12, and I'd put him to bed, and I'd sit on the floor in the dark, and we'd talk, and he'd go to sleep. And my son would lay there, and one night he said, Dad? I go, yeah. Dad? Yeah. Dad? What? And he goes, Dad, do you like your wiener? I like my wiener. I can make it big, and I can make it small, and I can do all sorts of things with it. I really like my wiener. Don't you like yours? And of course, this is one of those parental moments where you don't dare put it in the memory book, but you broadcast it on the radio. So I sat there trying to hold it in because I didn't want to laugh. He was being very sincere. And I said to him, you know, son, what I have you wouldn't call much of a penis, and no, I don't like it. I don't like my wiener. But I'm really glad you like yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was really quiet, and he goes, Dad? I go, yeah? How do I know I'm not like you? And I said, son, if you want to go to the doctor, if you want to have tests done, if you want to talk to a therapist, I will take you and I will butt out, and you can find your own answers. But I said, from everything I see, you're all boy. And then he was quiet, and he rolled over on his side away from me. He says, no, I know I'm a boy. I just wanted to see what you say. And then I thought, you little booger.
I thought some
other word. But,
right, I know.
But he, that is a boy, a man, they're connected to their body part.
Mm-hmm.
Very connected. It's defining. It's important. It's part and parcel of who they are. Such as a woman who has a mastectomy, okay? Often am I still as much a woman as I was before, okay? But for a transsexual, there is no connection. It's like a lump. It's like a tumor. It is. They're not proud of it. They don't get off on it. They don't want to show it off, and they don't want people to see it. So we're looking at a population that is not connected to the body part like men are. But what men see is not a vagina. They see the anti-penis. And that's what's
right.
So scary. But what they need to understand is this is a population of people who are not connected in any sense from the brain to the body part. And once they can see that, then they'll feel a lot less threatened. Because it's not about a pervert going into the women's bathroom. Are there perverts that do that and say they're transgendered? Of course. But there are perverts who do that who are heterosexual, and there are perverts who do that of all demographics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do with gender, and it has nothing to do with orientation. It has to do with whether that person has some, you know, mental illness or some malady or some abuse, usually from abuse issues.
Mm-hmm.
Most sexual predators are coming from abuse issues, not from gender and orientation issues. Mm-hmm. In fact, 90% of all predators are heterosexual.
Right.
So
I want to shift gears here just for a minute, though. And I want to remind my listeners that we have about 12 minutes left. If you have a question and you want to call in, the number is 480-949-1310. I want to ask you, we've been talking about the transition, mm-hmm.
Right.
Can you give us the five-minute description of what someone actually or you actually had to go through in terms of transition,
sure.
emotionally, psychologically, as well as physically? And then I want to leave some time, because there are people who are kind of shy about calling, and especially on a topic like this, and I want to make sure we leave some time near the end to talk about your website and where help might be found for people in the Phoenix area as well as outside.
I didn't realize how quick the time was going, so I'll try.
I know. I mean, we could be doing three shows on this.
I'll try to hit the high points very quickly. I developed in puberty, didn't know what to do about it. I couldn't go to my folks. It's a small town. I was at a parochial school. I avoided the showers like the plague. I'd mop floors, et cetera, et cetera. And one day the coach made me take a shower. The boy saw what I was like, and they beat the crap out of me, took a mop, and there was no one to go to. And these were supposedly Christians doing this, but it was a play out of fears. And so the biggest issues are my own fears of being safe. My own fears of going to get help. Who's going to understand me? And when you look in the DSM at the time, it said deviant, deviant, deviant. And if you look at the APA, the American Psychological Association, you look at the diagnostic manuals, everything said that people like me are deviants. Now, they were using a clinical word, but I, at the time, it just scared the hell out of me.
That was back then.
Right. Often, mm-hmm. Psychology uses culture as a measure of wellness, as I said on the other day. And if culture is a measure of wellness, then fast food should be good for us, okay?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't long ago that being gay was a mental illness. It wasn't long ago that being black was a permanent mental deficiency. It wasn't 100 years ago an independent woman could be locked up by her husband in an asylum and lobotomized. So when psychology is at its worst is when it embraces cultural norms as a measure of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's at its best is when it looks at the health of the individual, the health of what helps this person live a productive life and be true to who they are. That is when psychology is at its best, which is why I love therapy. I went to therapy, and it was the scariest day of my life. I finally went to therapy when I couldn't hide it anymore. I found five therapists. I finally picked one, and she was enormously helpful. But the first day when I walked through that door, I knew my life would change. I was scared to death. I was wearing a three-piece suit. And she said, "How can I help you?" And I was scared and angry, and I said, "Why the hell am I here, and why the hell are you here?" And I've been with her almost 6 years now, and she inspired me to be a therapist, and I just cannot thank her enough. I think that therapy helps us address key issues. You see, gender is a core issue, just like orientation can be a core issue to help us hang on to who we are. But it helps us also then build to explore our relationships, our values, what is important. Everything comes out of us as to what is our life all about. How do we live a healthy life? How do we come to terms with who we are? Because in the end, it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what you think, Stuart, of me, or what my family mm-hmm. thinks, or what my workplace thinks. It matters what I think. And that's what I had to come to terms with. My own internal homophobia, my own internal transphobia, that I would lose everything, all those are things that had to be worked through in therapy. I did lose my family. I lost my brothers. My one brother said to me, "Well, if you like men, you're gay. If you like women, you're a lesbian. Either way, you're a faggot." One brother mm-hmm. said he would kill me. One brother said, "I'm just a man who likes to wear dresses," and on and on and on. But the one about orientation dawned on me that I can't win. I can't mm-hmm. win, because depending on you and your viewpoint, you decide what my orientation is. I have no say-so in the matter. You could see me as straight or you can see me as gay. It really, mm-hmm. I have absolutely no control over it. It's a matter of perception. So then what a transsexual has to come to terms with, since people will perceive what they want, am I okay with that? Can I come to terms with that? Can I deal with my own homophobia? Can I accept that I can be loved and it doesn't matter what's between the person's legs?
Stuart, yeah. We have a caller on line one, Martha from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Martha, thanks for calling. You're
Good
on the
evening.
Air.
Thank you. I have a grandson who is now 8 years old mm-hmm. that has had feminine tendencies since he was two. I mean, I know this child is really a girl in his heart. I try to support him as much as possible. He loves pink. He loves glitz. He loves hanging out with the girls, you know. Mm-hmm. But his parents, I don't believe, are aware of this. His father is a real redneck, and mm-hmm. his mother, I just don't think they would accept it. And I'd like to know from your experience, what else can I do to support this child?
Well, are you related?
Yeah, he's my grandson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part. Well, the best thing to do is, my grandmother I loved because she was very accepting of each person. She was just took each person as they came, and no one messed with my grandmother. And the mm-hmm. best thing to do is that the child knows that he is safe with you.
Oh, and yeah. If he wants to paint his nails, we paint his nails, you know.
And, you know, because some of this, it may just be effeminate behavior. He may not be gay. He may not be transsexual. It may just be effeminate behavior. But if he is gay and if he is transsexual,
I think he's transsexual.
He
just always acted like a little girl. You
know? He shouldn't be ostracized for it. And the big problem will be whether dad sees his sexuality come in question because of his child.
Right.
You see, that's where parents get screwed up. They look at their child as a referendum on them.
Oh, and if he does anything wrong, you know, if he's accused of being a sissy
mm-hmm.
and ridiculed, and it's like, no, he's not. He's just being himself. You know?
And if I could, you know, unless there is abuse issues at home, you know that the child will stay with the parents.
Right.
And so the best thing to do is to make sure that the child always is safe with you and
okay.
always can talk to you and come to you. And then as that child grows, he or she will figure it out.
Good.
And
there was one other level to it, Martha, though, that my gut's telling me I need to interject here is
right.
the mother and father know what's going on.
Yes, they do.
The mother and father see who he is. And they're just not ready to deal with it yet. They're just not ready to deal with it yet, which is all the more reason what Helen's saying is so true. There has to be some safe place, some non-judgmental adult that he feels like there's a safe haven for. And when your daughter or son-in-law or your son and daughter-in-law are ready, even one of them individually, mm-hmm. to at least have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be the one they'll go to because they see you with him.
That is very true. The elephant's in the room, and everybody
mm-hmm.
sees it, and no one will talk about it because gender will manifest by age four. It will.
I could tell before he was
so,
two.
And whether people pay attention or not, that's a whole different matter. Or whether they want to see it, that's a whole different matter. And that's
so I commend you, Martha, for actually listening to the show and calling in, because the key is for you to educate yourself as much as possible so that you are there for his parents and for him when they're ready, that you're going to be the expert and you're going to know where to send them to get the help that they're going to need when things finally are out there. And so I really commend you for... number one, for not being frightened of what you're seeing and to be the loving support that you obviously are for this child.
Oh,
because
I love him to bits. You know, I don't care. He's my grandson, whether he ends up being my granddaughter or not. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
I love
really,
him.
That is really wonderful of you to say mm-hmm. that. And the best you can do is just be there for him. Just mm-hmm. be
okay.
there. Because as long as he knows he's safe with you, he will tell you things he won't tell anybody else.
Oh, he already
right.
does.
You're doing the right things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank you for... Have you listened to the show before?
Yes, I have. I enjoy the show very much.
I hope
good.
It was helpful.
That's good to hear. And thank you. And call in again sometime. I appreciate it, Martha.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And we are kind of winding down now, so a good way to kind of close this is to really talk about Helen-Hill.com, because that's a place that Martha can go to in order to get more information and to find out what organizations might even be available in the Phoenix area, because I know you have links there.
I have lots of links and information and articles, and I just want to thank you and just quickly say, use common sense and use compassion and treat people the way you want to be treated, and we can get through it all.
Well, that's true about everything and anything. And Helen, I really admire you, and I think you're an incredible example of empowerment in the world, and I want to thank you for taking your time
welcome.
On this Friday night to join us.
All right.
I also want to thank my listeners for listening in on a Friday night, whether you're driving or home somewhere. This is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM 1310 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Tell the Truth Faster, and we'll be back next week. It's another show. Have a great weekend, a very healthy and safe 4th of July, and happy anniversary, Dad and Zena.